It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Well, tonight it is just a two-man show. It's going to be me and Jim. So Jason's out, Brad is out, Josh is out, and I think this is the first time in over 100 and some odd episodes it's just been a two-person show.
Wow. Well, this is the hotty-totty crew here, so here we go.
I love it. So what's going on with you, Jim? Looks like from the Skype, you're getting ready to pack up and move in the background.
Yep. We buying a house, so there we go. We're a condo, a new condo for us. Going to be moving next month, so looking forward to that. Over double the size of the condo we're in now, so yay for all that. I'll be able to get fast internet. I think I'm going to be moving to like a Spectrum like 940 down plan. You know, we'll see what that really means. You know, like in, you know, theoretical, it's 940. We'll see what we can actually hit once I get there. But so I'm excited for that and excited for lots of space for activities.
You know what I learned in all my years of moving is I will never move myself ever again. I will always hire movers just because I think if my marriage is to last, I will never have to actually go through that with my wife because it does not end well every single time.
Yeah, we will definitely be hiring movers. We even toyed with the idea of can we have somebody come in and box us up, but we're not going to go there. We've decided that with the wedding to pay for and then the house and everything else, you know, we'll definitely pay for the movers, but we're going to box everything up ourselves and unbox it. I mean, we're moving maybe 2 miles from where we are now. It just so happens that we found some place that was really close to where we are. So it shouldn't be that big an issue.
That's the best and the worst kind of move because it's kind of like you're having to put the effort into it. You know, you could be moving across country for the amount of annoyance and irritation that you're going to have. So when you just have to go 2 miles, when we moved from the apartment into the house where we've been for about the last 12 years, we went through the same thing where it was, you can make like a few dozen small trips, but still, oh my God, it was just the worst. And never move in the summer either. That's the other thing. Always move in the winter or spring.
I could almost have some boxes on like subscribe and save for every 12 months because this will be the third straight year I've moved and haven't moved very far. So I was on the 8th floor for a couple years in that building downtown and I moved to the 10th floor because they were renovating an apartment in January of 2018. In January of 2019, I moved from that building downtown up to Megan's condo where I am now. And then now, you know, a little over another year later, I'm moving once again. So for me, it's almost seem an old hat now. So I'm ready to buy a place and move in there and stay a while.
Yeah, I'll be happy if I never have to move again. I tell you, the worst moving experience, and I've had tons of bad moving experiences, but I think the absolute worst was in 2006. I think we were moving from, my wife had graduated Ole Miss, and we were taking her down to pharmacy school in Jackson. And we got we went and got a U-Haul out in the middle of nowhere, North Mississippi, like Pontotoc or something. And it looked like something out of Texas Chainsaw Massacre where they sent us to pick it up. And there's this old Uncle Jesse-looking dude from the Dukes of Hazzard who's just, it was freaky. So I'm driving this thing back. We load it all up. And this is like August. This is like really, really the worst time to ever do anything.
August in Mississippi.
We don't even get out of Oxford before it breaks down and we're over at like on Jackson Avenue. And we're sitting in this no air conditioning in this thing because, you know, it doesn't work. With all of our possessions in the back of this U-Haul. I think it was the 4th of July, so I'm begging anyone to come out and help us with this broken down thing. And you know, a U-Haul has the governor on it. It can't go more than 70 anyway. I don't think the air conditioning worked. That was the longest, like, I would have paid any amount of money to not have to deal with that situation on so many levels. Like, there was just multi-layered misery. Actually, that may be a good name for the podcast, multi-layered misery.
Yeah, that was, that sounds like a crazy one. I've moved quite a bit, but I haven't had any that went that bad. Yeah.
Whew. Well, enough of that fun. Let's just jump into things, what's going on this week. So I noticed in our group chat, you had posted an article from developer Steve Strezza, I believe it is. If I'm mispronouncing that, I apologize, who is a developer who works on the Tumblr app for iOS. And he wrote a very interesting blog post about how iOS is adware. He called it the paywalled garden, and he makes a very thorough argument, I guess, for the way that he thinks that iOS is adware. Since you pointed me to this, I'm sure you read the whole thing. What did you make of that? I mean, we can get into all of the arguments that he makes, but just at a high level, what did you think?
So, and you pretty much revived your blog with two posts in less than a week. one of them about this. It's like, I don't know if you've posted in months, and all of a sudden it showed up in my RSS reader. I'm like, whoa, it's a Brian sighting. So I saw that. I think I got that link from Hacker News. I love Hacker News. If you we can put a link in the show notes. If you don't follow it, it's basically like nerdy links every day. You know, they kind of get voted up and commented on. It's really good stuff if you're write code or just interested in tech in general. I agreed somewhat with what the guy put in there. I think the overarching argument I agreed with. Before you say it,
just in case our listeners haven't read it, we'll put a link in the show notes. But the blog post talked about several apps in particular, the music app, the TV Plus app, Apple Arcade, News Plus, the App Store. So I just wanted to give everyone who's listening, if you haven't read the article, a little bit of context about this. And I think So
basically, Apple using the iPhone as its own personal ad platform now.
Basically, if Apple has a service that has a pay component, if you go into the app for that service, it notifies you about the service being available. So, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. So,
yeah, no, I get your point there. If you're clicking on the music app on an iPhone, then you would expect to see something about Apple Music when you do it. When you click on the wallet app, you would expect to see something about, you know, the Apple the credit card. I mean, it's the things, they're tied together closely, but they don't have to be tied together for you to use them. You can use music on your phone without actually subscribing to Apple Music. If you still buy music, but even then you're buying music more than likely from Apple. So that tie in there again. If you're still buying CDs and ripping them, then God bless you.
And I hope you remember to take your Geritol because you're old if you're actually still doing that, probably.
Right. I mean, I cannot remember the last CD I bought. I definitely can't remember the last new CD I bought. I know I've, it might have been 3 or 4 years ago at least, maybe longer, picked up like a couple of used compact discs that were for stuff that at that point I couldn't get off of iTunes. But I, as far as like actually buying a new release disc, I know I've gotten one or two in the mail over the last year where I've bought a concert ticket and they come with a free disc. And so I have them, but I don't actually have anything that I would want to play them on. So they generally never get opened even.
Yeah, I don't want to be the guy who reads his own rebuttal. I mean, I did write a lengthy rebuttal to this, but I will hit some of the high points. And the first example that the guy gives is the music app in particular, which right away when I'm reading this, you know, it kind of made me raise an eyebrow. It's like, how dare the music app advertise Apple Music? And then I got to thinking about it, and well, the Apple Music app has four functions. So the first is to let you get the music that you're streaming from Apple. The second lets you listen to the music, presumably, that you purchased from Apple. The third is to let you access your own music that you're storing in the cloud through Apple, which would be through iTunes Match. And then finally, to listen to your own music library that you could have gotten from anywhere. And out of all of those scenarios, the most common and popular one is streaming. Streaming has killed not only... Streaming killed Blockbuster. Streaming killed the CD stores. On-demand reading killed bookstores. This isn't like any sort of controversial information. We know that this is the most popular thing. And I got to thinking about this. You know, if you've had an iPhone for a long time, if you've had it for years, in the early days of Apple's, not just of the iPhone, but you remember years ago they had the Rip, Mix, Burn commercial, which seems weird now in retrospect. But the entire legacy of Apple was the iPod, right? You'd buy music from the store, but more often than not, you'd either get it from CDs that you ripped, you'd get it from things that you got off of file sharing or whatever, and you would build these music libraries. Those days are kind of long gone. I would say probably since at least 2012, 2013, it's the reality has been streaming, even since, you know, the rise of Spotify really solidified that.
I've got to wonder if the music app in Catalina will even rip a disc anymore. I guess it will. I mean, you're not going to buy a Mac with a CD player in it, that's for sure. You'd have to have an external disc, you know, a CD player plugged into the Mac to actually read it. But I don't even know if it's actually got a ripper built in now where you could rip your own music.
I'm sure it probably still would. I mean, I can't. I actually, today, Jason had asked me to get him an external drive because I guess he has some software that he found that he needed. And I have a drive that I had yanked from my old PC that used to be just my Blu-ray ripping drive, and I can't really get it in. I guess you can see it. I have this adapter that will allow you to take any sort of device and turn it into a USB device. Well, this morning I tested it and it worked, so I guess I could test that after the podcast. I could actually go and do it. But
those are really handy devices, by the way. I've got one around here somewhere where you could basically take any hard drive, like any external hard drive, and or not external, like any hard drive, and basically power it up and hook it to your computer. Super useful.
I told Jason if he wanted it, he could have the drive, but I have to have the adapter back. So really the long and the short of it is, the music app has that legacy listen to your own library function, but I would argue that's not even its primary function anymore. Most of those four scenarios, three of them involve you paying money to Apple, and only one of them allows you to listen to your music that you got from other sources. So I don't really find it offensive that you go into the app and it tells you about the service that most people are going to be using the app for. When I think of offensive ads, when I think of adware, I think of things that are constantly in my face. If I voluntarily enter an app whose function is to serve me that content, I don't really find that terrible. I find that is the purpose of the app. The one thing that he does mention is that Apple is bad about turning on push notifications, and that's obnoxious. So if you subscribe and you let it lapse, they'll send you a push notification. Hey, you can come back. That they shouldn't do, because they kick developers off the platform for that behavior. It's prohibited. You know, if Marco did that in Overcast or, you know, whatever, it would, that would be removal from the App Store. There's actually apps that have been pulled for doing that sort of thing. So I think that's inexcusable and they should stop. But I don't really find that offensive. The same thing could be said for the TV app, whose purpose started out to aggregate content from other providers. So you'd go into the TV app and it'd say, hey, you were watching this on Netflix or this on Hulu or this on whatever. Here's what's up next. And it still does that. But Apple wasn't a content provider before. Now they are. So they're going to tell you about the stuff that you can get from there.
It's not like when you open Spotify, you get an Apple Music ad. Or, you know, like if now, you know, if you open a game that's, you know, ad-based game, you might see an ad for another game. Well, that annoys me. I mean, because I would rather just pay for something and not watch ads to be able to play it. But, it's not like Apple's just putting ads on random places around the OS, like you said. I mean, they're specifically tied to apps that are Apple apps that are meant to serve that specific content that they're advertising.
It's kind of like if you went into the phone app or the messages app and you saw an ad for Apple Music. That would be obnoxious. If you open the app that allows you to access Apple Music and it tells you about Apple Music, that doesn't seem like a valid criticism to me. That seems like sort of trying to look for something to get offended. I don't get
Here's a good one. So it pops up a pop-up and says, hey, I was just listening to your phone call and you were talking about politics to somebody. Do you want to launch Apple News and see what's going on with Bernie Sanders?
Well, you know, it's a good segue into the next one, which was, you know, you had Apple News. News was launched from day one as a subscription service. That was its purpose. Now, it did have free content in there that you could use, but they made no bones about they wanted you to subscribe to be able to get the full value out of it. So the complaint that was also made was, well, if you go into the News app, it's pushing you toward paid content. Yeah, because it's a subscription service with a subscription app that you don't have to use. You don't see the ads for it unless you go into it. So again, I don't understand. Now I have had scenarios where a headline will pop up on my desktop because I have notifications turned on for news and I don't mind it. And I go in and it says, oh, it's to read this, you need a News Plus subscription.
Right. It's like Vanity Fair. You got to have a subscription for that one, or New York Times, or, you know, whatever it is.
Which, you know, fair enough. If that offends somebody, then uninstall the news app. You don't have to have it. You can delete the thing off of your phone if you don't like it. The other example that was given was the wallet app. Now, this one did actually seem to strike me as sort of a fair point. The first time you go into the wallet app, it will prompt you, it gives a full advertisement for the Apple credit card. Now, I could see that as something where they shouldn't do that. You shouldn't go into the wallet app to add your credit cards and have a big full page ad for the Apple card. On the next screen, when you go to add a credit card, it has apply for an Apple card underneath it as a second option if you want to do that. All the time that I've been using this, and I add tons of stuff to the wallet in iOS, I never even noticed that because the first option is add a credit card. Visually, I scan, I see the thing that I want, I touch it, and I don't even look at any of the other options because I found the one that I want. Maybe I'm weird like that, but I think they could ditch the first ad that has that full screen advertisement and just leave the apply on the second thing, and it would be fine, and it's so unobtrusive that I didn't even notice it until I saw the screenshot.
I've actually been thinking about getting an Apple card lately just because of the cash back when you use Apple Pay. But with that said, I also think that the Apple card is probably the most non-Apple thing that they do right now. It just seems really odd for them to have a credit card. I don't know. I mean, I can see, like, you know, when they used to have, like, the tie-in with Barclay, you know, for financing and things like that, you know, that makes sense. Like, you know, because people want to finance Macs, or, I mean, I financed a Mac a couple of years ago, you know, like 5 years ago, like my second to the last Mac or whichever one it was, you know, through Barclay, and had a Barclay card for a while until I, you know, paid off the Mac and canceled it. But yeah, the Apple card definitely seems like, you know, it's a service, but it seems surprisingly not Apple-ish. I don't know. But then here I am thinking about getting one. So
to be honest, that would be fine if they pulled all references to it from iOS altogether and just treated it like a separate thing that you could use or not use. Because if you think about it, the real benefit is not really the Apple card. It's Apple Pay. That's the thing that has right. the most benefit, because you can use any credit card with it. It's in your phone. I mean, that sort of skirts a line of egregious. Out of all his arguments that he could make, that would be the one that I would probably be the most sympathetic on, aside from the, you know, obnoxious push notifications, is I could kind of see that. Myself, I don't, even though I do buy a fair amount of Apple stuff, those purchases tend to be lumpy. That is, you know, I'll get a new phone, and every couple of years I may get a new iPad, or I'll get a new watch or something like that. But I don't make it enough that it would be a big deal. I'm a fan of our mutually held credit card that we're both fond of, probably more than the Apple card.
Yeah, but that one, I mean, you don't get any extra bonus points back on stuff like Apple Gear.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see. The other examples they had were things like Apple Arcade. And I think the argument there was a dedicated tab to it in the App Store, which, come on. I mean, that's not an advertisement.
It's a tab. It's not the first tab. It's a tab. Now, I did send something into our group chat where, I mean, prominently displayed when you open up the App Store, on the top left-hand side was, hey, here's some, you know, games in Arcade. But they advertise a bunch of apps in there, a bunch of games on that page. It's not like Apple's just putting theirs in there. It's theirs along with a bunch of other game on, you know, on that front tab.
Yeah, that one, the App Store and Arcade in general, I think those arguments were the weakest. It is a store. It is a marketplace. A marketplace typically has advertisements. If you go into a grocery store, they're going to have end caps. You know, companies pay a good bit of money to have their wares displayed prominently. So if you go into search and there's an ad and it's clearly marked an ad, and it is, I don't see the problem with that. I mean, if you're going to take Apple to task for that, you also have to take Google for that on their search results. And I know some people do. We don't live in a completely altruistic world. If I go into the iTunes app, they're going to advertise movies and TV shows that are on sale. They're going to advertise other things. Those are good. Those are helpful. You're in a place where you're going to get apps and or make purchases. So, you know, that to me was, it's disingenuous. It's
right.
It's whiny and ridiculous. Those are.
And Apple Arcade, I mean, to be honest, I'm not a subscriber because I play specific games on my phone and I don't need any new ones. But if you play any games at all, it seems like a really good deal because it's, what, like $5 a month, and you're getting a bunch of games that don't have any in-app purchases to them at all, and they're seemingly pretty good games. I mean, I did do the trial and would definitely be willing to get the service again if they ever start some sort of bundle with, you know, with Music and Arcade or Music and Arcade News and TV. You know, if they start any kind of Apple bundle, I'm there because I'm definitely paying for music already. And, you know, I would throw in a little bit for Arcade and News. TV, I really did enjoy the morning show, but I haven't watched anything else on Apple TV yet. But, you know, I mean, but Arcade does seem like, to me, the best of the bunch as far as, you know, value.
I've done the free trial, and I think it may have expired by now, and I think I'm still on it. I may or may not keep it, just because I stay pretty busy as it is, so I may not have time to fully appreciate it. If they did have a bundled service that had all of these wrapped into one, I would probably do it, kind of like an Amazon Prime, and that has to be something they're thinking of. But what I thought was the most interesting about this...
With the phone, too. Like, I put the hardware on it,
yes.
Give me all the services, give me my monthly phone payment, which they're already getting from me anyway. You know, it's like I'm always going to be, quote unquote, leasing a phone from them. And I know technically yep. We're buying it, but to me, it's just a lease. You know, just keep me at a new phone every year and give me all the services. You know, what was it from Parks and Recreation? Just give me all the bacon that you have.
All of your bacon, yes. All of the bacon. I feel kind of the same way. And again, to this author's point, he made a good point that a lot of us who are enthusiasts of the ecosystem don't notice these things. Because I subscribe to all of these things except for News Plus. So I never see these advertisements or never consider them advertisements in the way that they do, simply because this is something I already have, so they're not pushing me to do it. I'm really not trying to poop on anyone who looks at this and says that this, you know, they find this obnoxious. I get it. But at the same time, I think the example I use in my blog post is, would my mom find this offensive? Would your aunt find this offensive? I just don't think that people are going to find this offensive. We saw this weekend that Samsung puts advertisements, random advertisements, in the phone dialer of their phones. I think one of the new flip phones had this, where you go to dial, and I was reading the responses on Twitter, and users were like, well, just deny internet to the process that's serving up the ads. Duh.
Wow.
Or, yeah, this has been the way it is forever. So I understand how if you're involved in an ecosystem, you can be blind to this. And I really don't want to be that way. If I'm paying $1,400 for a phone, I don't want to see an ad for some random unrelated service in the phone app. But if I went into, let's say, if I went into Google's music app and they said, here, you can subscribe to our music app, I wouldn't even view that as an ad. I would view it as, well, gee, I wanted to use this. I opened this app specifically. Thank you for letting me know how to use the thing that I just opened.
Exactly.
Reading a lot of those responses on Hacker News, of course, it devolves quickly into just whatever thing you don't like about Apple, which, again, is fine and valid. But at the same time, I don't understand this desire for complete distinction between the hardware and the software side. I mean, yes, they are becoming a services company. Yes, they have to generate new revenue. They've already seen that phone sales have kind of slowed. Now, they have had a few quarters where it's spiked. But in general, this is not the case. I mean, it's been the most successful thing they've ever done by a long shot, but you can't hang your future on this one. You can't put all your eggs in that basket. And they have to get better at services. They have to bring people on board. People like us who are diehards don't like iCloud or don't like some of the things they've done.
We remember when Apple was awful at services. Does anybody remember me.com?
Mobile Me. You remember that, where I think it was Walt Mossberg tore them apart in the Wall Street Journal?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Steve Jobs called in, you know, the heads of those divisions, and why is our friend Walt beating us up? Why go and fix it? So they haven't been great at this. I mean, a lot of they get drugged for this, and I understand. I mean, they have had their difficulties in the past, and they're trying to fix it. And I have watched a few things on the Apple TV Plus service. It's pretty good. I've played a few of the Apple Arcade games. They're perfectly fine. I don't see it in the same way. The push notifications are obnoxious, but I don't really know what they want. I mean, one of the things that I speculate is that you get people of a certain mindset, right? The people that read Hacker News are the same people that could be happy from a command line with the most base OS that you could have, and, you know, just they could run Linux on the desktop and customize it and trick it out like we all used to do, and that's fine. But for the mass market, there's a pretty big distinction between...
Your mom can't do that.
No, not at all. There's a pretty big distinction between putting an ad for, you know, Betty Crocker or something in the phone app and telling you about the service that's in the app itself. So I don't understand. I think their hearts are in the right place for complaining about this, but with the exception of the wallet and the push notifications, I couldn't disagree more.
I think part of the gist of it was not necessarily just the ads, but that Apple is kind of swung from using software to try to sell their hardware into a using hardware to try to sell their services. And that was part of the article kind of, you know, that slant where because of that, maybe the hardware isn't quite as good as it used to be, or, you know, that definitely the software is, we all know, isn't as good as it used to be. You know, the focuses are in different places now. And so that was, you know, part of it. Besides just the advertisement piece of it, it was, you know, they're getting better at services, but at the detriment of what else?
I think that's a fair assessment, I could say. I mean, I would say from a hardware perspective, iPhone and iPad are still rock solid. The Macs, you know, this will be a subject for another show when Josh is back too, when we talk about what we think the future of the Mac is. But yeah, I would say that's an area that's been shown a little bit of neglect. They have a lot of focuses in a lot of different areas. And if you want to be mad at Apple, be mad that iOS 13 has been a big sloppy mess, you know, for the most part. WatchOS 6 has been a big sloppy mess.
And Catalina.
And Catalina has not been great either.
I mean, it's just been a bad upgrade cycle all the way around. And I, you know, I'm going to knock on wood here, but I do expect this year's upgrade cycle to be super, because it's the kind of thing where when you get in trouble at home, you know, and you get in big trouble and you get yelled at by dad, for the next week, you are on the bestest behavior. You know, I don't know that it'll stick, but I definitely expect this upgrade cycle in 2020 to be spot on, because last year's was so bad that it's almost like they have something to prove and they're going to go the extra mile to prove it, I think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
No, I tend to agree. I don't think they want the bad publicity this year, I hope. iOS 12 was very good. iOS 13, not so much. So here's hoping that it's like the, you know how some film franchises, you know, like the even numbers are bad or the odd numbers are good or vice versa. I'm hoping that it applies to,
yeah.
So hopefully this won't be like the Rocky movies or whatever, like the odd numbers are good and the even numbers are bad or whatever the metric was, or Star Trek movies or however that went, but.
Yeah, we don't need no Clubber Lang.
if they codenamed iOS 14 Clubber Lang, I think that would be the greatest thing ever. Something that we hope to see for iOS 14. So Mark Gurman over at Bloomberg had dropped a rumor, and there's a couple of things. I think the one that I've posted into the show notes is about Spotify may be allowed to stream directly on the HomePod and be set as the default music app. But more than that, it looks like that Apple's finally allowing or considering allowing people to set their own default apps in iOS. So if you want to use Spark for your email, you could do that. If you wanted to use Todoist for your task manager, you could do that. Honestly,
Fantastical.
This is... Yeah, there you go. Fantastical would be great for the calendar app. It would sort of take the wind out of the sails of the Android has allowed this forever crowd, which, again, that would also bring new converts to iOS. And that would probably be one of the last remaining knocks that you could make against iOS compared to Android, is changing the default apps. Beyond that, having used them both pretty extensively, that's really, to me, the biggest difference. Now, of course, if you're invested in Google's ecosystem, then, you know, Android's going to give you a little bit better of an experience, but setting the default music player would be a huge thing too. And it would also allow them to stand on their own merits. If you make a better music service, prove it and people will come. Or if, you know, you want to let them do the competing one, but I think they're going to face a lot of EU antitrust stuff over this. So it's better to get sort of in front of it now, I think.
I think the music app is almost the least of my worries, because it's not like, very rarely do you click on something. And I mean, if you click on a link and it opens music, then you probably clicked on some sort of Apple link that's going to open Apple Music. You don't really link in from the outside with Spotify or Apple Music, but with email and with the calendar and with to-dos, I certainly think that, you know, those, when you click on like a mail-to link, it automatically will only launch the mail app on iOS. That's a pain in the butt. You know, like you basically have to kind of copy the email address and then open up Spark and send it, or do, you know, some sort of, what are the, you know, the share sheet sort of thing, you know, to get there. So, you know, I applaud them for, you know, including music in this, but to me, music is almost the least of the worries in that case.
I think one of the things that didn't get really mentioned in this, because it's just a rumor, is if you're going to turn the iPad into a real computer, you need to give it that capability, just like the Mac has had forever. You really need to. Imagine if you're doing this for work and you're using Outlook on iOS or iPadOS rather, and you want to send an email, all you're using your iPad for is work, touching that mail to link, had better open Outlook, because that's where maybe all your contacts are. That, even though it has these built-in integrations where you can integrate at the OS level, many people don't want to take advantage
and
of that.
Contacts. There we go. There's
exactly
another one.
Contacts would be card hop would be a great way to.
There you go. Yep. Yeah. So that in that context with the iPad, it totally makes sense. I do think they don't need to make it necessarily easy. I mean, you need to go in and, you know, pick something and then, you know, confirm it. Cause this seems totally like the thing where my mom would call and say, I can't get to my email anymore. And, you know, somehow she's enabled, you know, some Gmail app, you know, instead of just the regular app or whatever. I think it needs to be a conscious decision by the user, and not I don't think an app should be able to offer it to you.
Not
Does
just,
that make sense?
Yeah, not just that, but you also want to be careful so that an application can't hijack this. I think that's also another big worry that you would have more in the mobile world than the desktop world, is that, you know, if you toggle this thing on and all of a sudden Outlook takes over your, you know, you go and install it, but maybe you didn't mean to configure it. The next thing you know, you know, I've never set up Outlook. Remember that I see this on Windows PCs a lot, where you would set up a PC for a family member or something. And they always had like that Windows Mail component that nobody ever used.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, you'd get a call from said relative of, I got this mail program, I don't know what this is. I can't get rid of this. And then that sort of, I mean, I know it's a weird comparison, but it's sort of an apt comparison. So I would, having some sort of toggle inside of iCloud, for example, that says even on a per device basis, yes, I explicitly allow this. Yes. You know, we've talked about this specifically in regards to, I think Windows, when Brad mentioned it, there was a mode in one of the things for Windows where if you try to do something other than the App Store, if you ever wanted to toggle it off, you would have to do a reinstall. That would be the same sort of situation here, I could see. I mean, the case could be made to allow it, but there's a hefty price if you want to go back.
Right. No, I mean, it's everything's still got to come through the App Store and be just like that is now. But you can go into your settings and change something there, you know, that would trigger this app that you've already got installed that, you know, that could do this.
Yeah, I think I would definitely take advantage of it. Fantastica would be at the top of the list on that.
I mentioned, I'm loving the new Fantastica. So I went ahead and subscribed now. The fact that you can add in your, instead of just being able to have the account in iOS, you can just add in the account in the app now. So because before, like I use Outlook for work, but I would have to have my work email added into the accounts app just so the calendar would be available in Fantastical and whatnot anymore. And now basically I've been able to remove all those accounts from the account setting in iOS and just say, I want to use my calendar in Fantastical, period. To me, that's right there is worth the subscription fee on new Fantastical.
Taking it back to Apple is bad at services for just a moment. The number of apps that I have that implement their own syncing, their own account sharing, their own things, tons of those things. I use the deliveries app that we've used forever, and I used to sync with iCloud. I quit doing that because there was more functionality out of syncing with JuneCloud, who makes the deliveries app, or, you know, syncing with Flexibits for your Fantastical stuff, or syncing with Panic. If you use, you know, Transmit and Coda and all of those apps, you want to use the Panic sync to do what it's, even though from what I read, CloudKit is pretty good for the things that it allows in syncing. The number of apps that don't want to play nice with but do their own thing.
I think they just want to do their own thing. Some little thing that either puts them afoul of the Apple rules, or they just want to do it a certain way, you know, and so they make their own. And I think, you know, through the history of of apps and software in general, everybody could say syncing is hard. I mean, it is a hard thing. It sounds a lot easier than it is if you're not a developer to make syncing work correctly. It really is a tough nut to crack.
Because all of those implementations can be slightly different in just enough of annoying ways. But yes, I've been loving the new Fantastical as well. The updates have come fast and furious for that too. I don't know. I mean, from an iOS perspective, yeah, you're going to notice it because it'll be in the App Store. Do check your Mac app pretty frequently, because even then, it's been updating so frequently that I don't even get the notifications. A new version is out. I think one Mac will do it first, and then the other one I'll have to go and check. As a matter of fact, if I do it right now, what do you know? A new version is ready to install. 3.05 I didn't have. Even though I have automatically download and install in the future, it's still they've been putting a lot of fixes and stability into this thing, so. One thing I have noticed that really irritates me about Fantastical, and I hope they fix this, is if you use a third-party meeting service like WebEx or Zoom, when you go to look at the invite on your calendar, if you look at it in Outlook, it formats the HTML, it has that sort of rendering engine in it. It does not have that in Fantastical. So if I click on a link, I see all of the text, all of the hyperlinks, and they're rendered in HTML, but they're not passed through a browser. So I have to look and see, where is it I click to actually launch the meeting? They really need to fix that, but... maybe I'll submit a feature request or ping them on Twitter or something. Let's see. We don't really have too much else. The coronavirus has been, of course, a problem. Apple's already said they're probably going to miss earnings because of this. And the new iPhone production in the fall might be impacted by this. Very good chance. But right now, it's still looking like there's a possible iPad Pro refresh that will be announced at the end of March. And hopefully the new rumored iPhone 9, they're calling it, even though it doesn't have a name yet, which would be the successor to the 8, which would still have the Touch ID button, which would make my wife very happy.
Yeah, I was totally not in the market for the new iPad Pro, but now that I'm back on my MacBook Pro from 2017, and I'm on an external keyboard, and you know, back being able to use both my monitors with it here because I don't have a separate machine from a client, it might be not Mac upgrade year. It might be iPad Pro upgrade year, and then I'll wait on the Macs and possibly, you know, eventually get a 13 if they ever put the new keyboard in it, or maybe even wait for an Air with the new keyboard. So we'll see. But the iPad it's a great little device with keyboard. Now I've seen rumors that there could be a backlit keyboard or a more of a Apple, what do they call the Magic Keyboard type keyboard for the iPad Pro?
Oh, I'd love that.
Versus, I mean, the keyboard they have now, the keyboard case is really good. I mean, I think it's better than the keyboard that's on my, you know, $4,000 MacBook Pro.
Agreed.
But if they put like a Magic keyboard style keys together for an iPad Pro, watch out.
Yeah, I didn't get the one for that came out at the end of 2018, so I'm definitely in the market to upgrade mine. Even though I just had, as I mentioned a few episodes back, the battery replaced in my current one, I would appreciate getting a new one and then either selling this one or letting a relative inherit the current new battery installed old model that I had. I would love, when I go on trips, to only take a sling bag or something like that that's much smaller that fits under the seat in front of me instead of also having to take my laptop for whatever reason. But only time will tell. I guess we'll find out in the coming weeks. Something that we had held over from last week was that it's been speculated that Apple Watch sales are bringing in $12 billion of revenue a year for Apple, and it's growing by 30% a year, which, again, Apple Watches are a failure. It's funny to hear that.
Yeah, nobody wears a watch anymore.
And all of YouTube only brings in $15 billion in comparison. So the Apple Watch is set to generate more revenue for Apple than YouTube generates for Google at some point.
That's just nuts, right? I mean, my mom got an Apple Watch for Christmas this past year. I mean, it was like a Series 3 or something, you know, like a super on sale model. But that's all she wanted, you know,
and still, I mean, good enough for most people,
yeah,
honestly.
Right. I mean, it's crazy. It's almost like, I think you'd have to go way back in the archives, but at some point, I started watching for Apple Watches. Like when I was traveling, we talked about it, you know, like if I was on the bus or on the plane, and I was kind of keeping a running total in my head, you know, of Apple Watch versus regular watch versus some other smartwatch. I need to do that again, because I bet there are more Apple Watches than, because back then, if I remember right, it was about 50-50 smartwatch, regular watch, with most of the smartwatches being Apple. But I bet nowadays it's definitely over 50% being smartwatches, and it's probably over 50% just being Apple Watches, you know, leaving plus all the other smartwatches that are out there.
They're saying that 65 million people have Apple Watches worldwide, which is a pretty good number, I would say. And they sold 30.7 million watches in 2019. And the Swiss watch industry only sold 21.1 million. So, I mean, again, you have to sort of take that with a grain of salt, because you could say, well, I'm sure the Casio at one point outsold the entire Swiss industry. But these are not cheap devices. I think the cheapest one's $200 or $300, which, again, with watches not being popular, and you have things like, if all you want is fitness, I know a lot of people just go out and get like a Fitbit or something like that. But so to have that level of competition and still sell that number of them is no small feat.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I mean, it always makes me laugh when I read stories like that, and you realize how differently Apple is handled versus other companies, or a different standard they're held to for things. You know, like if Samsung was selling $12 billion worth of watches every year, they'd be singing, you'd hear about it like on the nightly news, right?
Oh, for sure.
You know, so it's kind of crazy, you know, with Apple, it's just like, you know, it's on Tech Meme, and, you know, and that's it, you know.
No, of course. I do want to link to an article by Neil Seibart on Above Avalon. And one of the things that he points out that is that the watch can actually be used for new business models. And I think the example that he cited was a thing called Apple Watch Connected. And the idea was something like with a legacy gym, you could have people pay for monthly memberships and they don't show up. So there's fewer machines that would be needed. But if you had this, you know, if you're using the Apple Watch Connected feature to develop long-term relationships with gyms, they could go and sort of establish this relationship with the customer to sort of nag them to come in and use workouts. Hopefully not with ads, but, you know, forming that business relationship. Take somebody like me who I've been on a tear. I don't know if you've noticed you probably muted all my fitness notifications, but...
Yeah, it just makes me feel awful, so I...
Side note, I stay in competition. I have this friend in Mississippi where we're doing weekly challenges. Now, if you challenge someone, let's say you started on Sunday and it finishes on Saturday, you can't immediately challenge them to start again on the following Sunday. You have to wait a day to be able to challenge them again. So the start day of our challenges are usually moving, you know, here and there. But I stay in a competition with my buddy in Mississippi, and the maximum points that you can get, I've had to explain this to my wife, who didn't quite get it, because she thought, oh, if you just close the rings, you win. It's like, no. They give you a point system. You have to get 600 points in a day. Like, if I just close all the rings, I only get like 200 points. I have to go triple what I would normally do. So I have to do at least 40 minutes of strength training, 30 minutes of cardio, and then come home and walk the dog just to get to 400 or 500, and then just simply existing throughout the rest of the day will get me to 6 usually by end of the day. So I've not been able to get a consistent perfect score. The perfect score you can get is 4,200, obviously, 7 days times 600. And I've had a couple of days, I've been fighting sickness over the last couple of weeks, but we're 2 days into this week's challenge and I'm at 1,200 right now. So I just got to keep this up. I got to see the personal trainer tomorrow. So I know I can get it for Friday. Pretty easy. My wife's not working this weekend, so we'll go to the gym Saturday and Sunday. So I've got that on lock. Now, Monday and Tuesday will be the hardest ones, but I think I can do it. So I want to get that perfect score. I don't think, maybe there's an award in the fitness thing for that, but
I'm sure there's an award or some sort of badge for that.
But it helps my OCD, so I'm pushing myself. If I was just to close the rings, oh, I can do that, you know, eyes closed. With this, it's like, no. I've been doing like almost triple my move score every single day, double my exercise rings every single day, and there are some days that I get credit for standing 20 hours a day. Like,
yeah, I get those nagging messages, you know, at like 6:30 at night. It's like, hey, Jim, you know, if you go for a 20-minute brisk walk, you know, your rings are going to look a lot better than they do now.
when I was slacking off for 3 months, I hate that. But you want to talk about something obnoxious, not just ads. What's really obnoxious? I'm telling you right now that I'm kicking ass in this thing, right? I'm doing double and triple all of my goals, And I'm a really early gym goer. I get up and I go really early. I've had some calls over the last few days with a customer that's, you know, on the other side of the world. So that's sort of thrown my schedule a little bit off. So sometimes I have to go closer to lunchtime to actually get that in. Or, you know, if I'm up and working at 5 a.m. to 9 a.m., you know, maybe I'll go to the gym from 9 to 11 or whatever, just to compensate for the hours that were, you know, outside of work that I had to work. If something like that happens, the watch will say, you know, Brian, you're normally much further along in closing your rings.
Yeah, I hate those. Yeah.
Nothing makes me want to fling my watch into a brick wall like, all right, look, man, I'm crushing it every single day. I'm going to crush it today. Get off my back because I have a life to live. I have obligations. So, and again...
Yeah, there should be something about, like, if you hit, like, perfect scores for a couple of days, it should nag you. It'd be like, okay, this... Let's wait a little bit. Give him a little, you know, little lag time here. You know, obviously something's up.
Exactly. It's like having this this overbearing mother that's just sort of yelling at, well, you know, you could normally by this time you're doing much better. Is something wrong with you today?
I just think it's funny when it, you know, I get mine. It's like, Jim, if you just go on a 20-minute brisk walk.
Let me tell you, I go on a lot of brisk walks, and they never give you the same sort of points they give you on a treadmill or an elliptical, which is ridiculous. Even if I walk at a steady pace, but walking a dog who likes to stop and sniff will mess up your pace. So that is something. You know,
I've been down on my back the last couple of days, and so I'm trying to move around more, you know, to get it better. And so today at lunch, I walked around for about 45 minutes. I walked down the street, and there's a new Pokestop. Down a little bit down the street on the corner. So I walked down there and, you know, kind of did a loop back. But it's cold in Dallas. I was like, man.
It's cold in Atlanta. Today, it never got above like 39 degrees. It was, it's weird. You know, we had snow like 2 weeks ago. Then it was like 70 for a week. And now it's back freezing. So
right. It was like in almost 80, I think, this weekend. Yeah. And it's back cold here. It's crazy. If you don't like the weather, just wait. It'll change.
In 5 minutes, yes. So just before we recorded this, I actually wiped my watch and started over and did a fresh install. So if you see me looking off to the side while we're doing this Skype, it was just I've been placing apps back on my watch. I've had a lot of issues. I think, you know, we were talking about stability problems. Watch OS 6 is a flaming pile of garbage. I really do not care for it at all. And the reason I don't like it is that Siri is so much less reliable on the watch than it used to be. With Watch OS 5, I could do, because I think Raise to Talk was in the Series 4 in Watch OS 5, and that was fine. It worked great. It understood most of my things that I say. Now, probably about 50% of the time, Siri is useless on my watch. Have you had that experience as well?
I've had Siri problems with my AirPods for the last week. Like, normally they just
yes.
work, and here the last
yes.
couple of days, I can say it six times, and I get nothing. And at first I thought, well, maybe I'm carrying this extra phone with me, but I don't have it turned on there. You know, my little Pokemon Go SE phone, you know, or maybe the HomePod is picking up or something. But I even at one point, I don't know, 4 or 5 nights ago, went in and reset Siri, like went through back through the, you know, do this, do that, do this, do that, you know, setup where it gets, you know, tells you exactly what to say just to see if that helps. And it really hasn't. So I don't, you know, it's mostly through my AirPods. That's when I'm going to, you know, be using it when I'm just walking around with them and they're on and I say something. But it definitely hasn't been as good lately. I don't know which update introduced that issue, but it's definitely a problem.
I think when I went from 5 to 6, I'll give you an example of some of the things that I find most frustrating about this device that sells $12 billion a year that I think they need to focus a little more on. If I go... First of all, the Raise to Talk. So one of the things that I'll do is I'll raise my wrist and say, open the garage or close the garage. Half the time when I do that, it just goes, your garage. It just sees the words, your garage. Yep, your garage is closed. It's like, that's not what I said. Or I'll say, you know, open the garage. And it'll go, well, it's not responding. And then I pull out my phone, say the same thing, and it works immediately. So there's something about that connection that's just not as good in this one. And I've complained endlessly about personal automations that are kicked off from the watch not working. Which is also something that was pretty frustrating as well. But if I go and I have my AirPods in, they're bonded to my phone. If I take my watch and I press the crown to invoke Siri, there's this weird lag that just takes forever. It's like when you do it Bluetooth in your car, and it takes forever. And then it's like, is it listening to me? Is it not listening to me? I don't know. And then you see, you start to speak. It's very janky. I don't know how to describe it any more than that. It is unreliable. It was working very good in 5. 5 was fantastic. High watermark.
I've even had issues here lately with the handoff from the phone to the HomePod. Like, that was working like clockwork, you know. And then here in the last week or so, it's like I wave it by it and it doesn't do anything. I wave it and I kind of hold it there for a second and I let it sit there and I let it sit there. And then finally, you know, it'll transfer like the music or a podcast over. But that, I mean, when I started using it, it was working perfect. And then all of a sudden it just, you know, it's gotten less exact.
I'm just praying watchOS 7 is a little more stable. That was some of the maturity of this product. You can't run the beta releases of the watchOS on your phone, I mean, on your watch. If you do, you can't go back. So if you commit to a beta, you're committed to it for the life of that beta until that becomes a stable release. So I realize that the betas are usually intended for developers, but if I don't like it on my phone, I can go back. No such path on the watch. It was a really, really scary thing. So,
which makes it also more likely that the watch doesn't get tested as well, right? I mean, if
you would have to think.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot more people that are going to run iOS betas than are going to run watchOS betas for that very reason.
Now that they have an app store, now that they're trying to push more of that independence, that I'm hoping when the Series 6, if we get one in the fall, will overcome that issue. I'm really, really hoping. Let's see. So really, I think the last thing I wanted to mention before we go is that Trivia HQ shut down this week, and what a sad story that was. So I'm just going to read a little excerpt that that was on Twitter where it says, HQ Trivia officially closed up shop late Friday night, hosting the final show in the startup's tumultuous history. Matt Richards and Anna Raceman served as MCs for the final go-around, a stream that went on to last a whopping 40 minutes thanks to dozens of messy, booze-fueled tangents. After all the failed startup employees they fired earlier in the day, access to its live streaming software that has the capability of reaching millions of fans. If you just got here, this is HQ Trivia, a live mobile game show, Raceman said toward the beginning of the stream. We're going to read about 34 questions, and then you're going to get about 2 cents, and you're going to effing love it. So it was, I think that somebody posted they recorded it and posted it to YouTube. So you can watch that entire last show. Jim, you were a big, I never got into it.
I used to play it. I wouldn't say every day, but most days at the height of it. You know, if I would remember, you know, if I wasn't in meetings or whatever, because most of the time it happened like, you know, mid-afternoon or something, if I remember right. And I would try to play. It was fun. You know, I like trivia. You know, I like that kind of stuff. I consider myself, you know, a trivia buff. So it was fun. But then it kind of started going downhill. They lost the Scott guy that was pretty funny doing it. And, you know, I kind of just fell out. You know, when you kind of stop doing it. And it's definitely an app that it has to have momentum. And as they started to lose momentum, there was no getting over that.
Yeah, they say at the height of its popularity, it had 2.4 million concurrent users in March of 2018. I myself installed it, but I never remembered to use it was the problem. So I guess I was part of I helped contribute to that death. Because it's something, again, I am a huge trivia nut. I'll go and do like the bar challenges a lot. Pretty good at trivia. That's kind of my thing. That's kind of what I'm known for, is having a lot of useless knowledge. So...
I mean, there are a lot of TV shows that would kill for 2.4 million live users, right? I mean, just about anything nowadays.
Well, you know, I think if they had something where they played at the top of the hour every hour, or the fact that it was just one of those things that you had to use it at the time that it was available, and if you didn't, it was pretty much you couldn't do it. So that's not very good. I think somebody on Twitter had mentioned they did have this platform that allowed people to broadcast to millions of people, so there was expected that there would be this pivot that allowed them to take that software and maybe spin it off into something else, kind of like Twitter started out as a podcasting platform that lasted about 10 minutes before it became, you know, Twitter. So that's it.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, I mean, and it was the kind of thing, like you said, where it's like, hey, you've got Pokemon on your phone, and you can play every day from 2 p.m. till 2:15 p.m., and the rest of the day, that app is completely useless.
Yeah, that always seemed like a weird business model to me. I mean, again, it was working for them for a while, but if you're going to get more and more people, you're going to have to be more than once or twice a day.
Yeah, it was all about momentum, you know, and they built up some, and then once you start losing the momentum and less people start playing, then, it's just like, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It just, people are playing it, and they're playing it, and then once you're not, you don't have the propensity, whatever, to go back.
Yeah, I mean, think about things like how Rovio did Angry Birds years ago. Remember, that was like the big thing for the longest time. And I'm sure they're still around. I'm sure they probably did something with that money. But when's the last time you heard of something really cool from Rovio? You know, it's, you get your shot, you better milk it for all it's worth and save your pennies so that you can either pivot into something else or hold out until the next big idea comes along. But that is sad, and we will put a link to the final show, which is something to behold. So I think that's all we really had for this week. Different kind of show because it's just the two of us.
It wasn't too bad. Wasn't too bad.
That was pretty good. I liked it. Anything else you want to add before we go? Anything you've been watching? Anything you've been doing? I know you've been pretty occupied, so maybe not.
Yeah, I guess I've been pretty occupied lately. With the house and the wedding coming up here in a couple months. I did finish a big project at work, and so this week I've been able to relax a bit more, and I'm doing a lot of online training, doing some cloud-based database stuff, looking at some Azure, looking at some other things, Data Vault. You know, kind of nerding out on some database stuff this week and some coding stuff. I played around with Salesforce for a couple hours one day this week. We have a bunch of projects around it, and I haven't been on any of them. And I just wanted to, you know, get in there and see what it was all about. So, you know, it's been a good week for me.
Pretty smart how they built that as an actual platform that you can actually write apps for and develop for.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah, I totally get it. In just the short amount of time that I've been in there, you know, I'm like, this is CRM on steroids, and I can totally see why. You know, we have clients where they love the low code, no code aspect of it that we've been pushing out. And I mean, I think it's definitely here to stay. That's kind of a stupid comment. I mean, they're a billion whatever dollar company, you know, multi-billion dollar company, but still, it's, you know, for a CRM to get like that, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways they took the same approach that Apple did, where it's write something where you can write apps for this thing, and if it's compelling enough, people will come, and it becomes more of a platform than anything else. And then you have all these apps, it becomes sticky, and it becomes much harder to leave that platform. So yeah, I've used.
Right. I mean, and it's you know, there's a million use cases for it now. You know, it's not just a contact sales manager. You know.
Oh yeah, it has morphed into a many different things. So well, congratulations on that. As I said, nothing really going on with me. I've just been, you know, from September to December, I had some things I was working on, and I sort of slacked off, put on a few pounds, and I've been in insanity mode for for the foreseeable future until I get it off. But I am on a tear right now. I'm logging everything to the gram, and by the gram I mean weight, not Instagram. Inside of my Fitness Pal, I'm using a thing called Fitness AI to plan my daily routines. I'm using a personal trainer, and things are going pretty good. I know I drive people nuts on Twitter with the, you know, I'll post like, here was my workout today, and here's the mix that I listen to on Fit Radio, and here's...
Well, that's what I was just about to ask. Do you listen to radio mostly? Are you listening to podcasts while you work out? I mean, you're spending a couple hours a day doing this. I mean, you could probably consume just a massive amount of podcasts if you were actually listening to them.
So here's the thing with me. If I'm doing strength training, I can do a podcast, but mostly it's just to have something mindless in the background. So if it's something, I can't really listen to like a true crime or something where you have to really want to focus, it sort of takes me out of it. So I'll put on a lot of comedy podcasts, things like that, where I can just sort of zone out, do my reps, count my reps if I'm strength training. If I'm doing cardio, my wife, when we go to the gym, she will sit there and she'll watch whatever mindless thing is on the TV. It doesn't bother her at all. She can get her heart rate up. For me, I need up-tempo. I need dance mix, EDM, whatever it takes to just, you know, that oomph, 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 something that will get you moving.
Yep.
Because I've... Exactly. I have tried listening to podcasts. I've tried listening to books. I just can't do it because my mind, I will become focused on what I'm listening to. And I notice that because, again, I'm tracking my heart rate the whole time and it's like my heart rate goes down. But if I'm listening to some up tempo, and that's the thing I use is a thing called Fit Radio. I first learned about it when I went to my gym with my personal trainer. I have two different gyms. I have the one that I do cardio and strength training at, and the one that's like a studio that I do for the personal trainer. And I heard them playing Fit Radio, and it was all these weird DJ mixes of different things. So I went and investigated it. And if you subscribe directly through them, it's $5 a month or something if you pay for a year. And I have tons and tons and tons of mixes that I listen to. So today I was listening to a thing called Trap and Train, which was when I was doing my strength training. So I know if you...
So it wasn't Train Your Trap.
If you see me, I don't think I would be the person you would expect to be. That's what I have going on my AirPods, but that's what I listened to today while I did my strength training. And then I listened to some up-tempo club mixes when I'm doing the cardio. And again, none of this stuff. I think I've mentioned this before, like with Spotify and Apple Music, when I would listen to these fitness mixes I put together, over time, these algorithms think that's what I like. So it would recommend things that it's like, I'm not in the gym. Don't tell me about this.
Right. You were listening to music more at the gym than anywhere else.
So it assumed.
It thinks you're wanting to listen to instead of, James Taylor.
Exactly. So like at the end of the year, you know how Spotify was sending out that list of what you're most. The reason I didn't share it with you guys is because Spotify thought that I liked up-tempo music and Pitbull or something more than anything. I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. No. I don't like this. This is what I listen to zone out. This is not what I listen to because I like it, because I'm sitting down. What's the latest from Mr. Worldwide? No, I don't care about.
That's awesome.
So having a separate app that is just specifically for that. Now it does a lot of cool stuff. Like you can set intervals. You can pick which type of exercise you're doing, what you want your intervals to be. It can actually look at your heart rate and match the music to your heart rate or your desired heart rate too. So there's a lot of things that you can do. The syncing to Apple Watch works pretty good too. So if you are in a situation where you want to go on a run, one of the things that I didn't realize is that if you're syncing, you can turn off Bluetooth and make it use Wi-Fi. They have an FAQ where they made it load exponentially faster than it used to when I didn't follow the FAQ. Bluetooth is such a pain in the ass for transferring anything. But you can put mixes on your watch. It's not a bad app. Recently, my trainer at the gym was like, "Yeah, I don't like Fit Radio anymore. I'm going to go back to Pandora." So he'll be playing Pandora when we go and we go and do our workouts there. But I'm still all about Fit Radio. So I have about 50 or 60 different mixes that I listen to. But yeah, as you say, because I'm in there for at least 90 minutes a day. Whether it's because sometimes I'll do strength training, sometimes I'll do just half an hour of cardio, and then I'll go and do maybe some bonus stuff. Maybe I'm going to work on biceps 3 days in a row instead of just doing it one day and then resting or whatever. So anything that I can do to close the rings. So yeah, Fit Radio is a pretty good thing, and Fitness AI is this app. I don't know how I wandered across this, but they claim to have an algorithm, and it seems to work. Like you'll tell it, you go in, you pick what you want to do, whether you're doing short, medium, or long. It keeps track of all of your reps, keeps track of all of your weight, and it also looks at how long it takes you to complete each exercise and then makes adjustments based on that as to what it thinks you should do the next time. So there are times that I think this is the maximum amount of weight that I can do, but I guess I took a little too long to do it because the next time it'll still have me doing the same weight, but it may have me doing more reps. So, and it doesn't just generically pick one. It seems to be pretty intelligent. And so far, as long as I'm honest and I'm logging everything and I'm doing what it says, it doesn't seem to kill me, but it's still challenging. So I won't say what I'm benching.
So it's almost like a personal trainer in your pocket.
It is.
Like it's watching you, like a trainer can watch you and see if you're struggling or if you want you to do more or less. And this is the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and but what's neat about it is it makes you rest in between those reps, but it gives you like 45 seconds or 60 seconds or 75 seconds or something. And as soon as it's time, it'll ping me on my watch, begin your next set now. And then I'll do it. I'll hit whatever on the thing. It needs to have a little better watch integration. Like I would like to put my phone away and not use my phone, but I can't log the set from the watch. I can only know that it's time to begin the next exercise. So I'm constantly having to reach for my phone, unlock it, log the set, go back in. That's a little bit annoying. And if they would fix that, it would be perfect. I think it's like $75 a year or something like that, which is really not for what you're getting. If you use it every day, it's you'll get your money's worth. So,
Jim, start your brisk walk now.
What I've realized is I've become a real data nerd when it comes to this stuff because I can go and if you look, I can account for every calorie that I have. I can account for every exercise that I did. I can account for, and it's not like I'm fastidiously logging this stuff. Like I'll scan stuff with my FitnessPal, but it's not like, okay, I'll admit sometimes I am measuring stuff almost to the gram or whatever on the little digital scale, but I have a crept.
Megan's been dieting for the better part of, almost a year now. And she's got a kitchen scale and it's out and her portions are measured out a lot of times at dinner. She'll measure her exact cheese and her exact this and her exact that and she'll even tell me, like, there's there's two cups of cheese in the fridge. The one that's, you know the one I use, it's measured out for me, and the other one's for you. So make sure you get the
cheese
right one.
Cheese is the bane of my existence. I know that 1 ounce of most of the ones that I have has 110 calories, so I'll measure out half an ounce. You don't realize how small half an ounce is until you're having to do this. There's some videos that I watch on YouTube of a guy. The channel is Bro Science Life, and it's this guy who's doing like a stereotypical trainer, and he makes all these jokes. I find it hilarious. My wife, not so much. But one of the things that he mentioned was, you know, different diets that you can do. And I'll have to tell you about this off air because I don't want to repeat some of this stuff. But one of the ones that he had was, you know, the accountant of fitness. And it was, he measures everything. He's a nerd. He's ridiculous. He's not even like the cool accountant like Ben Affleck was in that movie, The Accountant. But that's kind of the way that I am. I even put that in like my Twitter bio this week was the accountant of fitness. Because that's what I find myself doing. I am meticulous to the nth degree. If I don't hold myself ridiculously accountable, I don't get results. So I have to be, you know, really, really good at that. But yeah, the weight.
That makes sense.
The weight's been coming off. The strength has been going up. I've been watching my progress. I'm able to bench more than I've ever been able to do. Deadlifts. I realize we probably lost half our audience talking about this. But this is the after show part. So I'll put links in the show notes for some of the things that I use, but it feels good. I've been feeling better than I have in a long time. I figured out a way finally not to starve myself of carbs and other things that I need. So that was one of my wife's complaints in the past is when I get like this is I get really cranky because I had cut out carbs completely and then I was about to go on a homicidal rage. Well, now I still include those. I just watch the macros pretty carefully. So I've still been happy and nice and in a good mood and not homicidal. So that's always a plus.
There you go.
I know a certain listener of this show said that I'm going to turn into a life coach at some point if I don't watch it. So I don't want to go that nuts. But if anyone ever wants to lose weight, I think I finally have it cracked. You just have to be OCD and go all in and have about 10 different types of whey protein that you use that tastes like various cereal milks.
Ugh.
I ought to put a link to that in the show notes too. My trainer turned me on to Ghost Lifestyle Whey, and there's some that taste like Chips Ahoy. There's some that taste like Lucky Charms cereal milk. There's another one that's Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal milk. The calorie content is very, very low. The protein content is very high and very low carb. And that's been a staple of my diet here lately. So anywho, I'm sure we lost about half our listening audience to that part. So this is probably a good place as any to go ahead and stop it. So
yep.
If that's all that we have this week, then instead of saying later, fellas, I'm going to say later, Jim.
Later, Brian.
Have a good one.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.